Welcome to episode number 24 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I talk to Tim Harding, who was one of the original members from the Australian top children's show, High Five. So four of High Five albums reached top 10 in the ARIA albums chart. They also received three Logie Television Awards and were popular all around Australia. So in this interview, we talk about some of his bands that he was in before High Five, which was Compass Mentis, and also one of the bands he's in at the moment called Soul Traders. Now, during the interview, we also talk about the power of the pentatonic scale, which Tim refers to a link on YouTube by Bobby McFerrin. So if you check out the notes on this podcast, you'll see that link and you'll be able to see what he's talking about, which is it's a great little insight to the pentatonic scale. So I've also put links into some of Tim's original bands that he did in 2009 in the UK, so you can check that out. During this podcast, you'll hear some clips from Tim's YouTube page of some of the covers that he's done. So we start off the interview by asking Tim who his main influences was for starting guitar.
Probably my first influence, I'd have to say, would be my dad, because he played guitar, you know, the whole time that I grew up.
Yep.
I started learning piano when I was about 9. I probably just got to the point where I was competent enough that I started to really enjoy piano that I picked up the guitar. And so I was about 12 by that stage.
Okay.
And so I just started high school, and I sounds crazy. Ike House had been pretty big in primary school, or my last year in primary school, maybe.
Yep.
I wanted a guitar that was black and looked like Ivor Davies guitar. And my folks complied, and they bought me this little Ibanez Roadstar, little black Ibanez Roadstar. And I just absolutely loved it. And we sort of went completely mental from then on, and just practiced all the time, and had, you know, dreams of being in a rock band and all that sort of thing. I had that guitar, and I learned, between my dad's acoustic and that electric, I sort of, those early years actually learning guitar, I didn't really progress a huge amount other than the practice that I was doing at home by myself. The big change came when I started getting lessons from a guy called John Bush. He's a great guitar player, really, you know, heavily been in the Sydney music scene for a long time. And just a really good teacher. They're not all created equal, one has to say.
Yeah, that's right.
Some teachers are, you know, you can spend a lot of time with and not actually get through a lot, and other teachers somehow figure out really quickly how to make you work and how to make you get to where you want to get.
Yeah.
That made a huge difference for me. And I think that was probably when I was about 15 that I working with John.
Yeah,
progressed heaps. And after that, and it was great. And that was around about the time too that I started a band with my brother and a guy from the Central Coast that I grew up with called Mike McCarthy, and another guy who's now a Melbourne local, Sam O'Donnell, the bass player, and a tremendous bass player. Turned out we only found it down the track that our grandparents had actually played together several times, because they were both players. Drummer, and his grandfather was a Don Burrows. He's a clarinetist.
Okay. So, Don Burrows.
Burrows, yeah.
Oh, right.
Don Burrows was his grandfather, and my grandfather was Frank Marcy, who was one of the better drummers in the country at the time.
Yeah.
Back 50s and 60s. So yeah, they played together quite often.
Jeez, that's amazing.
Yeah. So we just ended up in the same band together. So that was cool. We were in that band for about 4 years or so.
Yeah.
You know, the great thing about playing in a group is just that you sort of learn a different way of playing. I know that sounds weird, but you do, because you're no longer just relying on whatever's going on in your head. You've got to preempt what's going on in other people's heads as well. And learning to play together, learning to play as a unit and play tight and anticipate what other people are going to play, it makes it a massive difference to your playing. I think I would recommend it to anyone who is learning any instrument, that the second you are able to get together with a group of other people and start to put music together yourself, not only do you discover a new sort of joy in it, because you are creating music together.
Yep.
I think that's, you know, a massive part of what music's about, but you also learn so much, I think, from each other and about your playing, your own playing.
Yeah, for sure. So with that band, were you just playing guitar and singing, or just the guitar?
Yeah, I played guitar and sung. I was the main vocalist.
Okay.
But Mike, he was really our main guitarist. He did share some of the vocals, so sometimes I'd take lead and he would do rhythm and sing. Mm. And it was vice versa. But yeah, so that was a big thing. And being a vocalist, obviously, for me was always a big focus. I never wanted to be one of those vocalists who didn't play.
Yeah.
I remember hearing an interview with Billy Joel once. He was, you know, talking about that singers sort of have that thing where people's like, oh, yeah, he's a singer, right? Yeah, but what does he play? Like, you know, he's not a real musician. I guess for me, I never wanted to have that. I always wanted to be able to sort of hold my own as a player.
Yep.
As well as being able to sing, so.
Okay. And was that original band or cover band?
That was original band. Yeah, oh, okay. That was a band called Compass Mentis. And yeah, that was an original outfit. We played a very odd, because at the time, you know, we're sort of talking early 90s.
Yep.
You know, you sort of, the world was embroiled in grunge. So yep. if you're in a band, that was generally what the sort of style that most bands were going for.
Mm.
We were doing sort of funk fusion stuff. It was all a bit.
Oh, cool.
Like Dick at times, and we worked with some bizarre time signatures, and there was some cool stuff. I guess, you know, I began to sort of see where we were headed towards the end, possibly more in a bit of a prog rock sort of direction.
Yeah.
I don't know, have no idea at this point where that would have evolved.
Yeah.
But Mike moved up to Lismore and did the degree, the contemporary music degree up there, and I ended up taking High Five as a job, so that's kind of where we sort of ended up leading that.
Oh, so you pretty much did the band up until the High Five days?
Yeah, so that was, yeah, that went right through, so 98 I started High Five, so I was in that band, yeah, probably from about 94, 93, 94, 98 when I started High Five.
Wow.
Disgrace, boiling heat, summer stench, neath them black the sky looks dead, call my name through the cream, and I'll hear you scream again, black hole sun, won't you come? Wash away the rain, black old sun, won't you come, won't you come, won't you come.
So when you did the High Five with your audition, did you have to play guitar? Was that like a main thing?
I mean, it wasn't necessary. I don't think that was, you know, that they were specifically looking for someone who played guitar.
Yep.
But certainly, for me, the biggest advantage that had was that it was something I was really used to doing. I was used to playing guitar and accompanying myself when I sang.
Yep.
So, but I was able to then go into the audition and just sit there and play my guitar and sing along. It meant that vocal audition, I felt really comfortable and really relaxed and able to do. Yep. So when I had back audition, I had to sing to somebody else playing the piano, and that was far more nerve-wracking. So. I'm sure that it made a big difference just for me psychologically. But no, I think the producers really felt that the fact that I was a musician was a good thing. And obviously when I went into High Five, I was doing the music segment, and that's really what that had just been my experience as a guitarist. But I also, in Compass Mentis, I've been sort of playing percussion a little bit as well.
Okay.
There was some, you know, bits and pieces that I knew, like I could play the didgeridoo, and I could do you know, lots of little bits on instruments, you know, play a few notes on this or that.
Yeah.
So if I picked up the saxophone, I could actually get a note out of it, whereas some people, you know, just could struggle to get anything out of it.
Oh,
so I think
sure.
Really felt that was good to have someone who could do those things.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because I mean, you're always known as the music man, High Five.
Yeah.
So. My daughter is 21 now, so we pretty much grew up on those days. I think saw you guys live a couple of times.
Oh, in Melbourne?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, long time ago.
Remember those days? They were fun.
So with the audition, what was that entailed of?
The very first audition, which of course, you know, in most of these sort of TV things, is a bit of a screening thing.
Mm.
Back in those days, it was a little different to the way they tend to run them now. There's an awful lot of self-tests and, you know, people have to submit videos and all sorts of things, but we didn't do that in those days. It was, you just, you trust the agents to send you people that are going to be appropriate for the role.
Yeah.
You basically went in, there was that panel, and I had to sing a song, then present a little piece to camera, thing you made up, and then I had to do a dance. And after doing that dance, I'm still to this day fascinated that they thought they would give me the gig. if anything was going to make them just go, oh, yeah, next please. So I sat down actually and just had a chat with the panel, and then I played a song. I think from memory, I played "Ain't No Sunshine" by Bill Withers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Strangely enough, to this day is how I generally start most of my gigs.
Oh really?
Yeah, it's a good one. So yeah, I did that, and then after that, oh yeah, then I had to just do a little piece to camera, present a little piece to camera. Now, I hadn't prepared anything, and to be honest, I don't know why. I'd sort of thought, oh, I know, I just won't prepare anything, and I'll just wing it on the day. My advice to anyone going to any audition is don't ever do that. But somehow it sort of worked in my favor, and you know, I just came up with some story that was there from when I was a kid, and I was supposed to speak to the camera as if I was speaking to a child. And yeah, like for me at the time, I was actually working in a childcare center part-time while I was at uni, so I felt really relaxed about how to talk to kids, you know, like it was, you know, having a rapport with kids was something I did on a very regular basis, so that didn't worry me at all. So, you know, in that way, I guess I was okay to just make that story up at the time. Definitely wouldn't recommend it to anyone else doing an audition. And then, of course, they turned the music on and said, all right, dance. This must have been the most awkward, horrendous thing anyone's ever seen. Anyway, after that, miraculously, they called me back. And so then we had another audition, which had proper choreography and all that sort of stuff. So at the very least, I had the option to do somebody else's dance rather than make one up on my own. But that was the first time. So the second audition was the first time that they'd actually ever put us together as a group and listened to our voices together.
Yeah.
And that was quite an experience, I have to say, because, you know, the five of us, our voices were all very different, but seemed to blend incredibly well.
Mm.
Like in that group, in that original lineup, you know, not to take anything away from the lineup since, but Nathan Foley and Kathleen at the time, and I don't really care what anyone says, at the time, I still think Kathleen was one of the best vocalists in the country.
Mm.
Had she not done High Five and decided to continue her music theatre career, then I think everybody would have known that, and she's just absolutely incredible. And you can still go back, particularly the Christmas albums. If you listen to Jingle Jangle Jingle and I can't even remember the name of the other one. Oh, it was the High Five Christmas. The ballady sort of songs that are on those that Kathleen sang and that Nathan sang are just extraordinary.
Yeah.
They're incredible vocalists. And so it was a great learning curve for people like me who, as much as I'd been a singer for a long time, had never really worked in a serious professional sort of setting.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to be able to work with those guys and learn so much from those guys was hugely important for my, you know, for my career as a vocalist ever since.
Yeah. Yeah, because I remember seeing an old video. I can't remember who it was, but one of my friends was on New Faces.
Oh, right, yeah.
And I was just going through it and saw one of the contestants, and it was Kathleen.
Yeah, right, yeah, she did.
I was like, oh, wow. I didn't know she was, didn't realise at the time she was actually on the same show as them. And yeah, I thought, wow, she had a great voice, you know, like you're saying.
Oh, she really does. And yeah, I think there's a song called Christmas Star on that album, and another one called Dear Santa, I think it's called, that Kathleen sang. I'm sure they're on Spotify if you look those up. Just hearing her sing, I just go, wow, actually, she was properly amazing, and she doesn't even sing anymore, and it's heartbreaking.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, she's living the life. She loves it. She lives with her husband and her kids over in Vegas, but she's just incredible, absolutely amazing vocalist. I'd love the opportunity to sing with those guys again. I always remember it being a great thing. Probably one of the highlights, actually, of the whole High Five experience. And I remember saying this to the guys at the time, but we used to do Christmas carols at the My Music Bowl.
Yeah.
Prior to the actual event, we would do the orchestra rehearsal. And so that would be usually at Channel 9 Studios, and we'd just go in there, and the whole orchestra was just sort of sat out, you know, right in front of you. And there was like a little tiny stage in the front, and a bunch of microphones with fold back. And all we do is the five of us would just stand up there in a line and just sing to this orchestra, which was right in front of us. And it was just, it was an incredible experience, just singing to, you know, this incredible bunch of musicians and everybody just sort of, you know, doing their stuff and knowing how to do it, and singing songs with those guys. And some of them were obviously still very kiddie songs, but often they were you know, Christmas carols and stuff like that. And so you know, that was one of the rare times that we sang songs that weren't necessarily specifically targeted at children.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, the harmonies that we were able to put together, and the sound that we got was just awesome. So I still probably my fondest memories of working in High Five have been times like that, when we were able to just, you know, don't have to dance, we can just stand there and sing.
So do you still speak to the guys?
Yeah, we sort of speak every now and then, mostly thanks to the wonderful world of social media.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all sort of live in different places now, but it's, yeah, it's great to be able to sort of keep in touch and keep tabs on what everybody's up to.
Yeah. So no news on a reunion? Little gig.
Although, like, I keep trying to drop hints to the guys about the fact that come 2019, the beginning of 2019, so I think it'll be about February or so, February 2019, will be 20 years since the first episode of High Five went to air.
Oh, wow.
Still saying we should get back together, we should do something.
Yeah.
We'll see how many years I can grab hold of and drag.
So as far as yourself now, you're doing a lot of acoustic work, is it?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, I still work with a band. Interestingly enough, one of the guys from my first band, Mike, who is the guitarist from Compass Mantis, I still work with him now. We're in a band called Soul Traders.
Okay.
Basically doing functions, weddings, corporate stuff, that sort of thing. It's all soul and funk and great old tunes, really, really, you know, fun stuff to play and to sing. So I'm just a vocalist in that group. But yeah, the rest of the time, I do my own sort of acoustic stuff. It's, you know, predominantly covers. But yeah, I'm gigging every weekend. So yeah, usually 2, 3, 4 times a week sometimes.
That's great. Oh, very good. And are you still writing or?
Yeah, I haven't. Look, I wrote a song earlier in the year. It's been a long time since I've really concentrated on that. Towards the end of last year, I got together with a guy called Matt Scullion. We wrote a song that's ended up on his album that he's just released. So yeah, I still do a little bit of writing. I don't do it anywhere near as much as I used to. My brother, Pete, who was the drummer from Compass Mentis, is now that's his gig. So I kind of not that I just gotta go, oh well, I can't, you know, that's his thing now. I guess I just don't commit the sort of time to it that sort of he does. Because he writes to everyone, man. He's like, yeah, Judah Kelly, his single that came off the back of The Voice, that was one of Pete's songs. And, you know, that song, Jess Malboy's song, Fallen, that was something he wrote with a couple of guys in LA. And he's just, yeah, right for everyone. So,
okay.
Top songwriter.
Yeah. And he was the drummer of your band, was he?
He was, yeah. Although, a couple of years in, he really started getting heavily into the writing. That was about where it started. And Compass Mentis did an album years ago. Like, we did one album together. It was a bit of a, you know, 3-day throw together. But one of the songs Pete wrote on that, which, you know, looking back at the album, I think is one of the highlights. It's a real standout. It's one that he sang himself and he wrote it called Mr. Perfect. But even at that age, because I think he was only like 14, but incredibly sort of sophisticated melodic lines, really good lyrics, and he's a real creative, you know, seriously creative guy. So now, even though he's doing mostly pop stuff, there is definitely sort of elements to it that I know you can tell is Pete. You know, he's all over it.
So he plays guitar as well?
Yeah, he plays guitar, and I mean, he plays a bit of everything.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things, he just kind of taught himself enough of everything to sort of be able to put stuff together. And so he's got a studio at home and he does most of his stuff there. Anything obviously for release, he tends to take elsewhere and do that elsewhere. Sort of first stage all gets done at his place.
Yeah. And have you ever taught guitar yourself?
I have taught guitar, yeah, for brief periods, usually filling in for someone.
Okay.
I found that fun. I think that, you know, the hardest part is always trying to figure out where everybody is, where everyone's at, and try to give them something to sort of go away with. But I did enjoy it when I've done it. Yeah, it's not something that I do at the moment. I think probably because, you know, when you've got kids of your own and you're working every weekend, I'm hesitant to sort of, you know, do stuff after school, you know, interrupt that very little bit of time that I have with my kids before they go to bed.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but yeah, look, I think it's one of those things. I think teaching and being a teacher is an incredible, like I said, you know, right at the beginning, sometimes it's just about finding that right teacher that sort of really knows how to work with you. And I don't know if I have that, maybe, you know, I'm not sure that's me. Maybe I'm a wrong teacher or I'm all right. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it is such an important job. And if you're wanting to learn any instrument, you know, guitar particularly, if you are able to find that right teacher that is able to make you practice and to make you, you know, focus on the strategies that are going to actually propel you forward, then it can make a huge difference.
Oh, for sure.
In terms of your learning, but also, you know, in terms of your confidence and, you know, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, that's great. I mean, the main things I like to work on, you know, with my students is just some people, they work through the books, you know, go through this, that. But
yep.
I try to make each student different, what they like. So it's really about finding, about the student too, what they like.
Yep.
And that really helps. That makes them, they want to practice, you know, it's not like a chore where they have to do it, but they want to learn these songs, so they practice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I think that can make the biggest difference of all is playing stuff that you want to play. First time I sat down, like at my school, they had a guitar teacher that was there, you know, he was there on a Wednesday or something. But he was a classical teacher, you know, my school was not really that down with the whole kind of pop music thing. Everything was very traditional and very classical. And so this guy was from Eastern Europe, and he was an amazing classical player. Mm. But I didn't really get into it. You know, I as much as I wanted to learn guitar, I just wanted to strum. You know, I wanted to strum chords and to sing along and to play songs that I knew.
Yep.
So, you know, that's great. Like, Classical Gas is an amazing tune, and it's really impressive, and I'm sure the girls would have loved it, but it just wasn't what I wanted to learn. I'm pretty sure it was Segovia who said that someone who knows how to play an instrument, you know, the guitar properly, you've basically got six different instruments. There's no reason why it shouldn't sound like six instruments. Like, you got six strings, it should be six different instruments.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Someone who knows how to do finger picking style really well, you can sort of see that happening. You know, I got a guy up here, a friend of, called Adam Miller, who plays finger picking style. He's incredible. Mm. Amazing.
So do you do much finger picking yourself?
I don't really. There's a few songs that I do that I finger pick, stuff that, I don't know, I just specifically, for whatever reason, that particular song, it suits it, rather than using a pick. So I do a version, actually it's on my YouTube channel, which is Tim Harding Music, but there's a version of Fast Car that I do. I also do Blackbird by the Beatles.
Yep.
Those are all picked.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a few others that I've done before, Tears in Heaven and other things that just sort of like suited to just picking rather than trying to, you know, use a plectrum or strumming.
Yeah, I mean, like those songs you mentioned, Tears in Heaven and Blackbird,
they're
designed for the finger picking.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, sometimes you've got to sort of go back to that. You know, normally I'd just do everything with even songs that have little fiddly bits, I'd still be using a plectrum most of the time. Watching Adam play, that's another experience again, because he can sort of do these things where he's got like a bass line going and he's got some stuff going on and some harmonics and stuff at the top, and you're like, how on earth are you doing that all at the same time? But it's very clever.
Yeah, a bit like the Tommy Manuel.
It is, yeah. I remember seeing Tommy at a trade show in Sydney and sitting, you know, sort of halfway down, and so being closer to him than I'd ever been before, and just watching and thinking, oh man, I gotta go and practice this.
Yeah, he's amazing.
You got a fast car, I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we can make a deal, maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better, start from zero, got nothing to lose. And maybe we'll make something, me and myself, I got nothing to prove. You got a fast car.
So how about with lead playing? Do you do much lead playing yourself?
Part of what I do, you know, I use a looper. So often I'll start the song. I'm kind of one of those guys that don't like to spend too long at the beginning of the song building loops and rhythm and all of that sort of stuff. So I try to either build it as I go,
yep,
or I'll just start by playing a bit of an intro. And what I do sometimes, so I'll just play like an intro and I'll loop that, but I'll stop the loop and then I'll get back to, you know, when the solo in the song comes up. So then I'll just hit that again. Mm. I'll have the bass sort of guitar line underneath, and then I can solo over the top of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of when I tend to play lead. That's as close as I get these days. But yeah, that's good. I mean, I tend to, stick fairly closely to, you know, a couple of really basic modes, you know. And it's, that's all, yeah. Let's call it a Mixolydian mode.
Sounds better.
between the Mixolydian and the Aeolian, I'm pretty much, my repertoire is pretty much covered, so
yeah.
Tend to stray too far.
Yeah. Oh, it's good at least you're solo now. I mean,
that's it. No, it's nice to do, and I think it's nice for people like myself who tend to spend most of their time just playing to accompany themselves.
Yep.
Just explore some different things, and I always like to, like, I never have anything set. I was just trying to improvise something different every time. Occasionally I'll come across something, oh, that was a good lick, I'll use it somewhere else, and it's kind of fun to sort of still find those little things.
Yeah, that's really good, because, I mean, it's another thing I try and do with my students, So a lot of them say, oh, you know, I can't solo. But you just give them like four notes, you know, do a little jam or whatever it is, and say, hey, just do this over the pentatonic, the first part of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's amazing the stuff they come up with.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, just, yeah, it's just, just got to try.
I mean, it's weird, you know, Stevie Vai, who the guy can play all this incredible stuff really, really quickly.
Yep.
And then you'll have B.B. King, and you listen to his stuff, and you're just like, you'll get play three notes, and you just go, oh, man, that was amazing. You
know?
And so there really is that thing where sometimes it's just more about feel than it is, you know, the reality of it.
For sure.
And, you know, I think one of the great things about a pentatonic scale is that whilst note-wise it's fairly limited, you can, I don't know, it's like you can speak somehow a lot through that. You know, there is just so much in the way you play it that can be awesome.
I mean, another thing is, like, so my students bring in songs and I'll show them the melody of, you know, figure out the melody lines.
Yeah.
And once you start doing that, you realize, oh, wow, that melody line is actually all in the pentatonic scale, you know?
Yeah.
So when you break it down like that and tell the students to solo, like thinking of a melody, it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. There's actually, there's something about the pentatonic scale. I don't know what it is. There's an interesting video that I saw that was Bobby McFerrin at I think he was at a TED Talk or something. Mm. And he did a demonstration with the pentatonic scale with the audience, where he basically just sort of hums a note, and then he will jump from one position to another, and then he'll sing the next note in a pentatonic scale, and then he'll go the other way, and he'll get the audience to kind of sing the note with him as if he's jumping from note to note on a piano.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
And then he can just keep jumping, and the audience instinctively knows which is the next note in the scale.
Jeez.
You know, something about that pentatonic scale that just registers in our, you know, psyche. We get it.
Yeah.
It was an amazing video. I'm not exactly sure where it is, but yeah, if you look up Bobby McFerrin and demonstration of pentatonic scale, I'm sure you'll probably find it.
Yeah, I'll do that for sure. Check it out. If you keep walking.
Played in a rock band in the UK. If you want to see a very different side of Tim from High Five, you can look up Pangea, P-A-N-G-A-E-A, Pangea.
Yeah.
We released an album. It was just a self-titled album. That was between 2009 and 2013.
Okay.
That was a bit of a different sound for me. That was a few years after High Five, but. Mm. It's something that I've always wanted to do. That was the rock band that I'd always wanted to be in. And so, I was playing a lot of guitar. Then the guitar player that I was working with, a young guy called Al, he was a tremendous guitar player. You know, I never really felt like I was necessary because he was so good.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was great for me to be able to just fill in bits of rhythm and stuff like that. But, yeah, that's a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun making that stuff.
Yeah. Oh. So with the High Five days, 2007, was it you finished?
Yeah, I finished in 2007, so that was, 9 years, essentially.
Yeah, so after that, still stay in Australia or did you go to UK?
Well, I stayed in Australia from 07 till 09, so that was, you know, I was living in the inner west in Sydney for that time. I actually got out of performing for the most part. I was running a production company, and I still did a bit of presenting here and there because we were doing corporate and we were doing you know, TV pilots and stuff like that, so there was, you know, bits and pieces, but yeah, most of my work was behind the camera at that point.
Yep.
Didn't really do an awful lot of music in that time, and I think that was why when we sort of moved to the UK, in the end of 2009, I really sort of wanted to get back into it and sort of make that a main thing. So that's kind of what happened when I went to the UK. I started working with Pangea and then as a soloist as well. And then I started working with another covers band, and I did a stint in a Michael Jackson tribute show.
Oh, really?
And just as a vocalist, that was cool. It was called MJ Timeless.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was a lot of fun there. I mean, it's great singing those songs. That was huge. And I got to play guitar in that show as well, just because we there were three singers. It was me and two girls, and we just did a little acoustic bit in the middle of the show where we then, I think it was. And at one stage we did Man in the Mirror as well.
Oh, cool.
Acoustically. And it was fun. It was really good. And we even got to do that because that was in Blackpool in the UK, and they got a huge event there every year, which is the light switch on, because the illumination, they're called in Blackpool, is just like lights all up and down the prom and all this stuff. And this huge, big, touristy thing. Everybody comes to it. Mm. And every year, a certain time of year, they have the big switch on event, you know. And the year that we were there, I think Robbie Williams was singing there, and you know, The Wanted, and you know, all these sort of big pop acts in the UK.
Yep.
And we got to play at that event, so that was cool.
Well, that'd been great.
Yeah.
Yes, excellent.
Obviously, for anybody who's in the Newcastle area, I'm gigging all the time. If you want to check out my social media, anybody that gives me a follow and a like, it's always very much appreciated. So I'm on Twitter at TimTweets here, and my Instagram is at TimJHarding, and I'm pretty sure I've got Facebook as well. You're probably better just looking up Tim Harding Facebook. Yeah. I don't really know what the link is for that. But yeah. You know, look me up and yeah, give me a like and a follow. That always helps me out.
Excellent. No worries. All right. Well, thanks very much again for this. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks, Adam.
All right. I'll talk to you again.
See you
later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Tim. Yeah, it was great hearing about all he's playing, and so the people know him from the High Five days. You can get a real appreciation for the other things Tim has done and what really a great musician he is. So join me next week for my interview with Timothy Gaines from Striper, my second bass player interview. So until then, keep jamming.
Place a shining star upon the highest bough. Oh, 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 oh. And have yourself a merry little Christmas now. A merry little Christmas now.
Merry Christmas, everyone.